You're listening to St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. It's 31 degrees at 7:04. Good morning, I'm Camille Phillips. Although area rivers remain at high flood levels in the St. Louis area, waters have receded enough for I-55 and I-44 to open in the region. 141 remains closed. 911 service has also been restored in Fenton. But emergency personnel are continuing to take stock of flood damage along the Merrimack River today. The water has receded fairly quickly. The town of Eureka had little warning for how high the flood would be. Mayor Kevin Coffey says it was upgraded by 8 feet in 24 hours.
In that amount of time, we got 22,000 bags filled, and we got them stacked up in front of businesses. In a lot of spots, it overcame those bags because the flood was just too large. And in over 150 years as a town, we had never seen anything even close to this.
Residents and volunteers spent New Year's Day helping to clean up downtown.
The rain has stopped, but flooding in Missouri is getting worse. At least 14 people have died and thousands have been evacuated. The Merrimack River runs through the state and has had some of the worst flooding. Willis Ryder Arnold of St. Louis Public Radio sent this report.
Patty Titus stands at the edge of the Merrimack River as it runs up the side of her house and pours into her basement. It's the house she grew up in.
All my parents' stuff, dishes, furniture, lost my freezer, my refrigerator, things that can't be replaced. A lot of memories and things.
Family, friends, and volunteers fill sandbags and place them against the rising waters. Here in the town of Arnold, Missouri, the flood is swallowing scores of homes. Trucks drive by delivering sand to people who have been up sandbagging around the clock. Titus's daughter Maggie stands in water up to her knees.
I was born and raised here for 18 years. I'm on break for college and I didn't expect a flood, so it's kind of scary seeing my house filled with water right now. I'm trying to do the best I can.
The Merrimack drains into the Mississippi River, where much of the shipping traffic has been halted. Lieutenant Sean Haley with the U.S. Coast Guard says the swollen river is moving fast.
The main danger is debris, the high water, the flooding, and then I would say the increased velocity of the river itself causes a lot of potential dangers.
Haley says the crest is like a giant wave moving south and will cause problems downstream in the coming days. Louisiana's governor today declared a state of emergency because of the threat. The Army Corps of Engineers says this flood will be worse than the record one that hit Missouri in 1993. It's expected to reach its peak tomorrow.
In Eureka, volunteers and friends helped clean up flood-damaged businesses downtown. Mark Antonacci's law office took on about a foot of water on the main floor. But despite the damage, he says this old town will pull through.
This set us back a month, a few weeks, something like that. That's all. Joe Bacardi's been on that corner since the 60s. He'll continue. This building is 100 years old.
Closer to the river, Jeff Stanky used a kayak to get into his home. It's built to take on high waters, but he says cleaning up will take a couple months.
It's life on the river. It's great when it's not flooding, and it's mostly not flooding, so it's a trade-off.
Missouri Senator Roy Blunt and Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner toured flood damage on Friday.
It's still incredibly difficult to get around parts of the Midwest because of record flooding. Illinois and Missouri have been hit particularly hard, with at least 20 deaths now reported. Riverside towns have been swamped, highways have been closed, and trains and even oil pipelines have been shut down. St. Louis Public Radio's Dori Buscarin sent this report.
I'm here standing on a picnic table in Pacific, Missouri. It's a small town about 30 miles outside of St. Louis. The sound you're hearing to my left is a bright orange pump that's just taking water and pushing it out as fast as it can. Usually people come here to hike the sandstone cliffs or kayak on the Merrimack River, but that river has now overflowed its banks. It's just inundated the southern half of this town.
Mommy!
Oh, yeah. Helicopter.
Jody Howard is holding her daughter Brooklyn as they survey the damage. The family evacuated without packing. Brooklyn turned 3 at a Red Cross shelter set up in a senior center.
They brought her a cake and people brought her gifts, and that was so nice. I think she had a good birthday, even after all this. I mean, she keeps saying every time we're at the hotel, I'm going home.
About 8 inches of rain fell in just a few days, and in Pacific, the river came up fast, cresting at more than 28 feet above flood stage, 4 feet higher than the highest flood on record in 1982. At a Red Cross shelter on higher ground, Jean Scott says she and her sister Jeanette were surprised by a knock on their door by a rescuer with a raft.
We had 3 steps and we had our porch. That was already on our 3rd step. They came into the back door, and I woke my sister up and said, hey, we gotta go.
They only had time to grab a few clothes. Their whole life is in the trailer. Scott forgot her glasses.
I'm not sure what's going to happen. Our trailer will probably be condemned, and we've got nowhere to go.
Other towns are flooded, too, and 7 emergency shelters have been opened. In Fenton, a wastewater treatment plant was overrun. Sean Hadley of the Metropolitan St. Louis Sewer District says it had to be shut down.
That plant processes 6.75 million gallons a day. At the time of the shutdown, it was processing 24 million gallons, which is well over the capacity that it was designed to handle.
That means millions of gallons of untreated sewage are now passing into the river and eventually into the Mississippi. Transit is also choked. Parts of 2 interstates have gone underwater, and 2 sections of Union Pacific tracks are out of service. Amtrak is rerouting passengers on buses. Talk to any Midwesterner, and each flood year is likely etched into their memory. You'll hear about 1982, 1983, 2008, but those are usually in the spring or summer. This is a rare winter flood. Luckily, it's been a warm December. If the ground is frozen, flooding would likely be much worse. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon, who has activated the National Guard, says it's more water than he's ever seen.
You've got more water, higher water than you had in 93 at many locations, which means this is very dangerous. You've already had a number of deaths, and we're out there trying to not only help manage the situation, but to save lives.
In Pacific, the waters are not expected to recede for a couple days. Right now, attention is turning downstream, where the Mississippi River is expected to crest in southern Missouri over the next days. For NPR News,
Eureka suffered plenty of damage from the historic flooding, so some of the residents spent part of the weekend repairing homes and businesses. It's a source of pride for Eureka Mayor Kevin Coffey.
Their attitude is just incredible. They love Eureka. They love being here. People love living here.
Chris Greenagin is the associate pastor of Eureka's Central Baptist Church. He says St. Louis residents have stuffed his church basement with supplies for those hurt by the flood.
We're supposed to have an 18-wheeler full of cleaning supplies and bottled water that's going to show up here at the church to be given out to people.
Still, it could be weeks or even months before homes and businesses are fully repaired.
As communities continue to clean up and rebuild after record floods swept through the St. Louis region just before the new year, attention is turning to how these disasters can be prevented. In the St. Louis region, the damage was the most concentrated along the Merrimack River. As St. Louis Public Radio's Dury Buscarin reports, a 3-mile-long levee around the city of Valley Park kept it high and dry.
The ground is still pretty soggy here on the Valley Park levee. If you measure from the bottom of the river to the top, it's about the size of a 4-story building. And what we know based on flood maps is that the Merrimack River overreached its banks and got all the way to the top. Normally, people come here to use the bike path. There are a few picnic tables, too. But what it also does is protect the city of Valley Park during a flood.
I've seen ladies crying that they were just so happy to come back in that they came back into a dry house.
Valley Park Mayor Mike Panisse issued an evacuation order before the river crested, worried that the levee could fail. But the 3-mile-long earthen behemoth held, and hundreds of people were able to return to their homes when the water went back down. That's a far cry from Valley Park's experience during the 1982 flood, which prompted a campaign to build the levee in the first place.
The water come up, they didn't realize it was going to get as high as they said, and then the next thing you know, people were in their second stories of their house and, you know, trying to get out.
The Valley Park levee was built by the Army Corps of Engineers and later expanded, costing about $50 million in mostly federal funds. Levees are frequently used as barriers between rivers and cities built on a floodplain, but they're no panacea. Levees can fail or be overtopped, flooding towns unexpectedly. And many will argue that too many levees just push the water higher, making these floods more frequent and more severe. In 2008, geologist Nicholas Pinter worked at Southern Illinois University Carbondale, and he tried to tease out those variables in his research along the Mississippi River. Climate change and industrialization, he says, push flood levels up by a few inches. The Mississippi's levees send it up 3 or 4 feet, but the biggest difference is due to river navigation systems.
The Middle Mississippi River is intensely engineered. with the result that any flood that comes through, you have to ask the question, how much of that is natural, the rain in the contributing basin, and how much is the effect of humans modifying that system?
If we could go back in time, Pinter says, the solution is obvious. Don't build in a floodplain. But that's what people have done, and the levees are here to stay. So he recommends a three-part sniff test.
They should be used for infrastructure that is concentrated, high in value, and pre-existing. We should not be taking open floodplain and putting it behind a wall anywhere. That's a field of dreams approach that has put us in this position.
Bob Holmes of the United States Geological Survey in Rolla says levees can be built in a responsible way, without a major effect on flood levels in other places. He says floods are a natural occurrence. A levee or flood wall is just a decision to protect a certain area.
But it comes down to, you know, we got to live on the planet, you know, you have to have food, so we always have to make these trade-offs. Hopefully we do it in a smart way.
That's why many riverside communities will hold buyouts, where flooded homes get bulldozed instead of rebuilt, and newly created green spaces can absorb floodwaters. But what happens when one town builds a wall and the other doesn't? Who gets to decide who floods and who stays dry? During a press conference last week, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon says these are decisions for later down the road because they would require federal buy-in. Nixon says he thinks the cost of flood insurance does a fair job of curbing floodplain development, but doesn't think a statewide policy against it is necessary.
I would be very hesitant to, in a blanket way, where we have such a significant outdoor tourism industry that relies on business in the summer, especially on our rivers and streams, to say that you can't build there or put structures there.
In the meantime, Nixon says his main focus is flood recovery, so that towns along the Merrimack, Missouri, and the Mississippi can get back to normal as soon as possible. I'm Dury Buscarin,
St. Louis. When floodwaters crested along the Merrimack River before the new year, they topped historic records not seen since the flood of 1982. As St. Louis Public Radio's Dury Buscarin reports, the two floods have more in common than just their heights.
For St. Louisans like historian Dave Lobig, memories from the flood of 82 are seared into the mind.
Well, houses being flooded out to like the second story. That's what I really remember, and people being evacuated from houses and boats.
Even though a lot of floods look pretty similar, 1982 was a rare winter event, just like in 2015. Both occurred during an El Nino, and both were concentrated on the lower end of the Merrimack River, downstream from Sullivan.
There were 6 people died, yeah. There were 3,000 severely damaged residences, 700 residences that were completely destroyed. And there were like 18,000 people driven out of their homes.
That included the permanent evacuation of the town of Times Beach due to dioxin contamination. In this last flood, 25 people died in Missouri and Illinois. Early damage estimates for the St. Louis region say 7,000 structures were affected. At the National Weather Service office, hydrologist Mark Fuchs found a rainfall report from 1982, a paper he remembers thumbing through and going, wow, wow.
Well, in many respects, it was very similar. 5 to 8 inches is a pretty good guesstimate as to how much they had to trigger that record flooding. Not terribly unlike what we had a few days after Christmas.
And as recovery continues along the Merrimack, those who study these floods say it's time to take a deeper look at how we live in accord with our rivers. I'm Dury Buscarin.
In the waning days of 2015, historic flooding rocked the city of Pacific. High waters inflicted major damages on homes and businesses, including a building that served as a community gathering place for more than 100 years. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on how the McHugh Daily Building is battling back from the wrath of floodwaters.
If you rumble up to the top of Blackburn Park, you can get a picturesque view of the city of Pacific. Over the sweet sounds of friendly buskers, you'll see rows of tidy houses and retail shops. In the center of it all is a 3-story brick building brought to Pacific by rail car after the 1904 World's Fair. Like other structures in this roughly 7,000-person town, the McHugh Daily Building didn't escape the wrath of record December floods.
So right now, we're just devastated and all. Kind of waiting just to hear back from the insurance companies coming here this week and trying to figure out what our next step is. But we definitely want to stay in the town of Pacific. And, you know, everybody around here has really been good in helping out.
That's Pacific Brewhouse co-owner Luke Fagan in early January. December's floods swarmed into his eatery and inflicted thousands of dollars worth of damage. The building's co-owner, Tom Daly, says high waters also entered into other parts of the first floor. This isn't the structure's first flood rodeo, so to speak, but Daly says this particular flood messed up his building really bad.
Has it ever flooded like this before?
Yeah, in 1982 we had about the same amount, and in 1915 there was about 8 inches of water in here. We got about 40 inches this time.
Daly's assessment alludes to the historic nature of his family's structure. Before it became a venue for good libations and memorable events, the McHugh Daly Building was the center of Pacific's cultural life. The Opera House on the third floor hosted plays, high school graduations, and as Ed Wall explained, Missouri political legend Harry S. Truman.
He played on his baby grand piano over here and played in a little recital.
I hear he was a good piano player.
Well, he was, and I think somebody gave his, rumor had it, somebody gave Harry Truman's daughter a little trouble, and he offered to take him outside.
Flash forward a few weeks, and workers are feverishly getting the McHugh Daly Building back into shape. Unlike other businesses affected by the natural disaster, the McHugh Daly Building did have flood insurance. But Tom Daly, the building's co-owner, says that insurance came with a $50,000 deductible.
Thank goodness we paid that premium. So now it's paying off. Not paying off, but, you know, if we didn't have insurance, I'm sure it would be a lot more than $50,000.
Ray Gullett was tapped as general contractor for the McHugh Daly Building's renovation efforts. He says it's been a cool experience bringing such a historic structure back to life.
It's definitely a great project. I've been taking pictures throughout, posting it on Facebook, things like that. You know, it's kind of neat. We're going to do some of the woodwork on the front, too, and try and keep it the same as what it is. You know, all that stuff's over 100 years old, so it's definitely interesting to work with that stuff.
Even though it's taken a lot of work to restore his business, Brewhouse co-owner Steve LaFrance says he has plenty of incentive to get his restaurant up and running.
You know, there's customers we see three or four times a week, you know, to come and eat lunch with clients or, you know, come in and have dinner or with their families. It's a family-oriented place, and this is the gathering spot here in Pacific.
LaFrance and Daly are hoping that all necessary repairs will be finished at the beginning of March. When that happens, it will show that even Mother Nature's fury is not enough to bring down a piece of Pacific's history. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Cities along the Merrimack and Mississippi Rivers are still feeling the effects of last year's historic flooding event. Many residents were displaced and businesses had to close. As St. Louis Public Radio's Eli Chen reports, one business owner who was able to recover is taking steps to prepare for future catastrophes.
Walter Wolfner was not prepared for the impact that the heavy rains would have in his business, the Riverside Golf Club in Fenton.
The velocity of the water was so great that it picked up sand from the Merrimack and deposited it on the golf course. I mean, we'd never seen things like that before.
His clubhouse suffered the worst damage and took 3 months to rebuild. Wolfner doesn't want this to happen again, so he's applied for permits to raise his clubhouse by 11 feet. The work will cost him $200,000.
I have to bite the bullet and get this clubhouse up, and we can't have this happen to us, and we know it's going to.
It's estimated that more than 7,000 structures were damaged by last year's floods. I'm Eli Chen, St. Louis. In the last year, crisis counselor Scott Bailiff visited many residents in Fenton, Eureka, and other flood-damaged communities to see how they were doing.
You know, are they looking like they're getting enough rest? Are they showing any signs of depression?
He and a small team of counselors from Places for People supported as many as 130 people at a time. Now they're serving under 50. This month, they're checking in with folks that might be re-traumatized during the holidays and the flood's anniversary.
People who lost a lot of their personal effects when they went to go decorate for the holidays, like, oh, shoot, I don't have those decorations anymore. What do I do now?
The program, funded by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, will phase out by the end of January. I'm Eli Chen, St. Louis. The MSD had to completely rebuild the Fenton plant. Many of its primary functions took 4 months to restore, and its backup systems required as much as 8 months. MSD spokesperson Lance Lacombe says the next step is planning for future disasters. But it's tough. The Fenton plant already had strong defenses.
If the 500-year flood protection was defeated, what more should we do? And now folks will say, well, you should do more automatically. Well, that does come with a price, though. And, you know, that price is paid by the public, our customers, and we need to be sensitive to the financial considerations as well.
Lacombe argues that cities need to take extreme weather into consideration when developing floodplains. I'm Eli Chen, St. Louis Public Radio.